Welcome to Fantastic Females, our adventure to finding the mythical island of freedom together. I'm Kalyani.
And I'm Rupali. We are your next door finance experts sharing our experiences in the world of money and energetics.
Welcome to part two of Understanding Inflation. Before we get into this episode, I hope that you've heard part one of this topic. Part one was covered in episode six. I will leave a link in the show notes and you can also find it on your podcast app. As an exception, these two episodes go well in a sequence and they're meant to be heard in order to aid your understanding of inflation. With all of that clarified now, let's get into part two of Understanding Inflation. I'm so excited. So maybe now we can go into understanding some terminology that once again appears on the news and social media often. What is the Fed?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Federal Reserve is what we call the Fed in the market. You'll see Fed, you'll see Jerome Powell, you'll see all these names as flying around on the news media channels that you kind of follow. And the Fed is basically the central bank in the US.
Yeah, and connected to that is the FOMC, standing for Federal Open Market Committee, a committee which is in charge of basically bringing this situation in control between the inflation rate, the interest rate, the employment rate, demand, supply forces, etc., etc. And the head of this committee is Jerome Powell, and he has been causing all the stir in the markets recently. That's pretty much what you need to know for now.
He's basically the pilot of that ship that Kalyani mentioned earlier.
Exactly. And what he's trying to do is bring back the rate of inflation from the 8%, 9% where it is right now back to 2%. So he has a big ask in front of him. And what he may be choosing to do is a very quick, blunt and heavy-handed kind of strategy to achieve the 2%. But I feel for him, I feel like he's in a really difficult position and he's doing the best that he can. So what he's trying to avoid is something that we understand as stagflation.
Yeah, stagflation is when inflation persists during long-term periods. And as we explained, economic cycles, inflation's up and down, that's all a part of the global economy and that's kind of what we'd like to see. And so in order to avoid the increasing inflation and persisting in this way as it has for the past few months, Jerome Powell is basically increasing interest rates to squeeze the consumer a little bit, to stop spending, to kind of put some pressure on corporates through not being able to access cheap funding anymore. So basically the money that was provided to kind of backtrack a little bit and bring the economy in line with what it should be.
Yeah, and a big part of this is the unemployment rates. So when you see a continuous rise in prices called inflation, while we see a fall in employment rates, it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle where people don't have the money to buy items and they are not getting paid to work because companies don't have money to pay them while no one's buying their products. So as a consumer, you don't have money to buy products. There's no demand. Companies are not selling their products. So they're not earning and they're not able to pay their employees. You're also an employee, so you don't get money. As a consumer, you can't buy and the cycle goes on and on. This is a very difficult cycle to get out of. And we were taught this as an example of what happened in the 1970s, and all sort of theoretical models have failed to find an easy solution to this. So Powell is trying to avoid being in this situation in a fast and blunt manner as well as he can.
Yeah, and given today's complexity of how the world is integrated with globalization at play, with so many different factors versus the last time in the 70s, people are drawing parallels to what happened in the 70s and what could be done now. But the matter of fact is your, you know, spending is very different. Your options to kind of, you know, the way you live your lives, they're very different. And so Jerome Powell is trying to navigate that very difficult dynamic in the best way he knows how. And so while we're all frowning that, oh, our houses are more expensive due to the mortgages, cars are more expensive because we, you know, most people finance these, it's difficult to spend on these things. The reason why he's doing it is to really bring stability into the economy.
So if I say I don't like where we are right now, I want to again pay 180 dirhams. I want to go back in time and pay 180 dirhams for a full tank of gas. Do you think that will be good, Rupali?
While it sounds amazing, I would love to spend less than a dirham on fuel per liter, like as we did very many years ago. No, the short answer is no, it's definitely not a good thing. And it's not a good thing for these reasons, because that is what we define as deflation.
When there's deflation, you can understand, if you're a small business owner, then if people don't want to pay you the prices that you want to charge, you'll be earning less, whether it's a small business or a big business. When people are paying them lesser for their products, their revenues tend to shrink. When the revenues shrink over a period of time, you're able to pay lesser to your employees. When your employees get less as salary, that impacts their demand. And so the demand falls, which leads to, again, a recession in the market, right? No one wants to buy the products that are out there. It leads to a recession. And as the cruise ship turns into the recessionary period, slowly and surely, the production is impacted and consumers don't have money to buy. So again, we end up in a lose-lose situation. And this is not ideal.
This again highlights why stability and up and down is a part of the economic cycle, and the down, basically, which could be driven from a deflationary period, is not something we want to see. I think this brings us into a very, very important topic around mindset. So while we've kept it all about, you know, the economy and finance until now, I think let's dig into mindset and how we cope with things today and how we cope with change in prices, change in life, change in corporates, change in interest rates, because change is the only constant in life. So how do we navigate that?
Yeah, I would like to mention two things under this. The first being that inflation numbers are a lagging indicator. Just today, I was listening to something where they said that previously inflation has been reported officially even 7 to 8 months later than when it first started off. So back to the analogy of the cruise ship, it takes very long first for the cruise ship to turn and then for the radar to catch that it's turned. So the data takes even longer to reach. And the stock market is one of the places where I find myself a lot at and reading a lot about. That tends to spearhead the panic, spearhead the anxiety and the sell-off as it has been recently. And this is a little bit like the boy cried wolf kind of story, where we've spoken so much about an oncoming recession, an oncoming inflation. In some aspects, this was being talked about even in 2020 in my circles. So people were always operating from that fear mindset. People who wanted to operate from a fear mindset always were operating from that fear mindset. And I don't see them any better off today. So this is an important, very important thing to keep in mind, that the sentiment of mass psychology tends to be fueled by greed or fear. And at this point, fear seems to be dominating the mass psychology, the mass sentiment. And it's your choice whether you want to play into it or not. We've gone over very logical reasons why the prices are where they are and why this could actually be healthy for an economy if we choose to deal with it in the right way.
This links it back to the lack versus abundance mindset. And so the lack mindset is driven by fear, driven by, you know, just kind of, I think fear is the real underlying kind of sentiment. And fear is what is driving economic markets up and down. Fear is driving stock markets up and down in very real time. Headline risk, which is, you know, the sentiment driven by headlines that we see in the media that we consume, is driving markets today. So not many people understand what's driving the economy, why these cycles are important, but yet the whole world somehow is able to kind of straight away reflect and express their views through the stock market, and that's why the volatility, the up and down in the stock market, is it's been quite erratic actually this year because of the headline news. Every single day we've got someone new coming up and saying something about inflation, about interest rates. Last week, this week, I mean, we've got prime examples of what markets are doing as a result of just, you know, publications and numbers being put out there, which are actually lagging indicators. So that just brings it into perspective.
Yeah, it's been a tough market to play in, bringing some personal kind of experience into this. And I started day trading this year as well, along with the markets. And anytime there's an FOMC meeting or the minutes of the meeting being released, there's a press conference where Powell's coming to talk, I avoid trading on that day because the market tends to go either ways. There's no logic to it. And this is how the sentiments work in the market, and we need to understand this. There's no reason to panic. If you know what you're doing, then you're good. And that's what we want you to take away from this. So to end this whole topic of inflation, I think I would like to kind of end with, I would like to finish with what you can do, some simple things that you can do to combat this situation.
Yeah. And there are two parts of it, right? Your income is one, so the inflow, and then your expenditure, so whatever you're spending on, your outflow. Those are the two driving factors that are in your control, regardless of whether we see it that way or not. That's in our control. So what do you suggest?
Exactly. So I think let's tackle the outflow first, because we tend to always think that that's more in our control. So expenses, before we start going into expenses, first thing that I would suggest doing is to secure an emergency fund. The typical kind of recommendation is to have 3 times your salary as an emergency fund that you keep as a liquid cash fund that you can draw from at any time. So the first thing would be to secure this. And the way you can do this is to maybe reduce some unnecessary expenses, cut down on anything that you think is not necessary for the next year or so, or track your expenses. That's a good place to start as well.
Yeah, and then once you've kind of secured that fund, what is it that you can do with your access? I mean, today, whether we see it that way or not, it is prime. It's a prime opportunity to invest in the stock markets, because the upside, in other words, the potential of return is much higher than the potential for loss.
Yes.
In the, you know, 3 to 5 year mark, or even in the 1 year mark, you can make money if you kind of balance it out in the right way.
Yeah, this is really interesting because, again, I was reading a nerdy article about how even if the earnings projected go down by 15%, which is a lot, in the next 2 quarters, there is only an 8% downside, whereas there's an unlimited upside to investing in stocks. Stocks are just one aspect of how you can deploy your money. We mentioned a host of ways by which you can create some passive income in our previous episode. I will link that in the show notes. And whether you would like to have a fixed deposit, which still gives you some sort of a return, even if it's nominal, it's still worth having an investment that pays money. So if it's a fixed deposit or stocks that are on discount right now, if you're able to find real estate deals, if people are selling in distress in your areas, all of these investments would be great investments that you would come to value once the economy turns around.
I think now is the time to optimize how you use your assets and what you're doing with them. So some people may have, you know, a property that they're not optimizing in terms of rentals, for example. So today the rental yield is very high because property prices have gone up. So people that were able to afford buying a new house just a couple of years ago, today are not able to do so. And so renting is more an attractive option now today. And so if you have like a property, you can optimize it by renting it. As we said, these kind of downturns, or these, not even downturns, these kind of
corrections
do bring opportunity. So there's plenty of opportunity, and this is where your lack versus abundance mindset comes in again. So if you're in the abundance mindset, you're like, oh, excellent, these are my opportunities, and I'm going to take it on board without thinking, oh no, if I put my money here, I'll lose, I'll do this, I'll do that. And this is what brings it back to a very important topic that we covered previously, diversification. So not putting all your eggs in one basket, not putting it all in deposit rates, deposit accounts, not putting it all in stock markets, but rather spreading it across different investments.
Yes. Finally, a disclaimer, we're not financial advisors, so we suggest to please do your own due diligence and have a more sensible conversation from the information that you learn on this podcast. If you enjoyed this, please share it and recommend it to your friends and family, and we'll see you next time.
We are so passionate about making your lives more abundant with this information.
So with that, we bring this episode of Our Financial Adventure to an end. Please follow us on all social media platforms at Fantastic Females.